You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio. And now time for the Classic Car Show with Steve Rinaldo and Jim Weber.
Good morning and welcome to America's Web Radio and the Classic Car Show. We've got Mr. Jim Weber here at the round table, and a special guest is joining James Dunce, the president of Bell Performance, and we're going to be talking to him and James, and they're, I bet it's not even raining down there. It's raining here, as always. Anyway, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Classic Car Show, Glenn. And James, we're sort of going to turn it over to you. You know the questions to ask and the ones not to ask.
Sure.
That's the most important thing is you know the ones not to ask, whereas Jim and I, we can get athlete's mouth real easy.
Oh, my.
Well, the way you did that introduction, it almost sounded like I was president of the company. And actually, Glenn is the president of the company.
Well, I thought that's what you told me to make it sound like you were it.
You keep
telling me you're the chief cook and bottle washer. Is that?
No.
James, it's your turn to be in the barrel because Steve's not here. So
but you know, Bell is it's an additive company, and I'm going to let him tell you about that. But I want to give you a little background. You know, I've been in the mechanic field my entire life. I had the opportunity to run a national diagnostic competition for 16 years, and I was involved with the Glidden Tour, which is a classic car event that happens every year. And something that was starting to become real apparent is the problems with fuel. In the last 10 to 15, 20 years, fuel has changed. Gasoline, they put a lot of ethanol in it. Diesel fuel, they took the sulfur out. And that came with a bunch of problems. So the need for proper additives, and when I say proper, one of the biggest mistakes is people buy the wrong product for the wrong for the problem that they have. And you know, there's like 4,500 different additives on the market, and I can say I've used a good many of them over the years, and I can tell you that there's not too many of them that actually do as they claim. But Bell has kind of been, Bell Performance is kind of an interesting company. I met them like 35 years ago. I had an auto repair center. They were customers of mine, and I knew the owner, who was Charlie Williams. That's Glenn's father. And even though I didn't think much of fuel additives at that time, I knew that whatever Charlie was involved with had to be something good. And I have since, you know, I ended up going to work for the company, and I have found out that it definitely was good. They actually have products that work. I personally tested them. But I'd like to introduce Glenn Williams, and he's going to give us a history of the company because it's been around a while. So, Glenn, take it away.
All right. Thank you, James. Well, yeah, we do have such a unique history. Bell was actually started in 1909, so we are celebrating our 110th year this year. And, you know, that all came about because, you know, the year before, that's when Henry Ford started mass producing the Model T. And Mr. Bell was one of these prolific chemists, inventors, tinkerers. He just couldn't sit still, you know, and he noticed, though, that these cars that were being produced, they were starting to have performance problems very quickly, you know, sticky valves and other things, you know, where there's just an issue. And so he set about to try to, remove any kind of varnish or buildup that's been put on there, and he tried to restore the performance. And he tested all of these different kind of formulations, mixing them and whatever, and it took him a while, but he finally came up with what was a detergent that would be completely miscible in fuel, would go in and clean out, the engine on the car, and so it restored the power and what have you. And so that was when the fuel additive market was born in 1909. We've never found reference to an additive, that has been created sooner than that or before that. So anyway, from that time, basically Mr. Bell knew that he was onto something and sold this to a lot of independent gas stations and throughout the U.S. And then He also started to, in 1927, he realized, because that was just a one-function product, but in 27, he decided, hey, you know what, there's more issues with fuel that we probably need to address, and so that's when he came up with a multifunction product, and that's what we actually still keep the name from that 1927 product on one of our flagship products today. It's called MixiGo, and that was the product that was developed, again, for, you know, multifunction. So it had a lubricant in there. It had the detergency package in there. It had some water control additives in there. It had, you know, the power booster in there to kind of help out with, you know, these engines. And so this is a product that we have continued to keep in our line. Of course, it's been updated throughout the years. But, again, this guy, Mr. Bell, think of him as kind of like the Thomas Edison maybe of fuels or something. You know, he was one of these guys. He would test and test and test, and he would try to create and craft, and he developed more than 70 patents in his name. But he was a terrible marketer at the time, so he would sell these patents off to other companies, and they would go on and make a fortune from them. So anyway, that was the story of Mr. Bell. And so as we came to, you know, in 1950s, Mr. Bell actually passed away. He had moved the company from Ohio to Orlando and continued to add things like for a diesel additive in the 1950s and also an additive for atomics. And so, you know, he was able to kind of really expand the line, but then he passed away. And so that's when there was a change of ownership in the company. So,
so Glenn, how did your father get interested in this company? What made him, what attracted him to this?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. My dad and my mom worked at the time at Martin Marietta in Orlando, Florida, and they had been doing things on the side, you know, side projects to try to save up money because their dreams were to become an entrepreneur, basically. They wanted to strike out on their own and do something that would really help the world, help, you know, people out, and they wanted to do something that they had that they could do to really build kind of a company themselves. And so they came across this opportunity, them and some other investor friends that they had, and this was in the early 70s and when they were still at Martin. And so it was just amazing because they said this could be a great opportunity for us to really get in and expand this line and expand the distribution and what have you. And so they were trying to find out if these additive formulations were any good, and of course none of the people that were investing were chemists. So they did a search in North America for any one of the best consulting chemists they could find to come in and evaluate the formulation. And the search committee came back and said, well, it's funny, we've done a very exhaustive search, but you have one of the foremost experts right there in your backyard at UCF, which it was not called UCF at the time, University of Central Florida, but it was a professor at the college, and his name is Dr. Christian Clausen. And so he actually has, he's one of the world's foremost experts, and we think you should use him to come in and evaluate the formulations. Well, this gentleman had worked for a number of the oil companies. He was a, you know, consulting chemist for a number of entities, and he also had testified before Congress. This guy was top-notch. So he came in and evaluated the formulations and said, you know what? He said, these are excellent base formulations. They're very good. They're going to be very effective in the fuels. I can see how they're being used right now. He says, however, you know, fuels are changing, and he says, we can probably do some things as the years pass to change the additives to address other conditions that develop in the fuel, because, you know, they're always regulating fuels and what have you. And so we basically brought him on as a consulting chemist, and he had been a great friend and fellow compatriot in this thing for many years. So
I have a question.
Go ahead.
We're talking about fuels, and let's just bring it right down to basics. Gasoline today, and there's a summer blend and a winter blend. And how can we, or what can we do to adapt better running conditions to overcome some of the summer and winter gasoline
because I don't know if you folks are aware of it, but I see it when there's a significant temperature change, and there's drivability problems that come up.
Well, first of all, you have to understand what winter and summer blend fuel is. There's a term called vapor pressure. Vapor pressure of fuel, it's a rate that a liquid will actually evaporate. And what they do is they put gasoline in a closed cylinder with a pressure gauge on it, and they raise the temperature to 100 degrees. That becomes the vapor pressure. But vapor pressure is regulated by the EPA, and what they do is they change the formulation because in cold climates, in the wintertime, gasoline doesn't vaporize very easily. And so what they do is they change the formulation so that it evaporates a whole lot better. And then on the opposite end, with the summer, if you had the higher vapor pressure like they had in the wintertime, in the summertime, that causes a vapor locking. Not so much on the fuel-injected cars, but any of the carbureted cars, they have issues with that. So you really can't, there really is no additive fix to that. They do change, and I worked for AAA for a number of years, and it was interesting that in the springtime, when they were converting from winter to a summer blend, there was a line across the U.S. where they had a lot of calls for breakdowns, and it was related to this vapor pressure change.
All right, that answers my question then, because we see it here in Atlanta with the significant temperature changes, like as much as 40 degrees sometimes. And you get some people that come in, and they do have drivability problems, and they're even running into it now with the high-mileage injected cars.
So mm-hmm. Well, the biggest problem, if you have summer gasoline in a cold area, the most noticeable effect is going to be it's going to be harder to start the car.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And, of course, remember when we had carburetors and closed-loop carburetors, and, boy, sometimes it was a nightmare with those cars. So at least...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, at least... But, go ahead, James.
No, I was going to say, you know, now the big issue is this ethanol.
Yes.
You know, I was working in the dealerships in the 70s, and in 1975 they started with the catalytic converters, and they had a product back then called gasohol, which is the same thing. They were starting to mix alcohol with gasoline, and the problems came up right away because we noticed in the repair industry, we noticed that vacuum lines would be deteriorated. If you squeezed them, they would stick together. Floats in carburetors would actually disintegrate. And I had some of the plastic floats. They have hollow plastic floats that somehow that fuel penetrated that float. It was on the inside. And I remember having a float sitting there for months, and the fuel never left, but it got in there.
Yeah.
And I know ethanol had something to do with that.
Well, I ran into that, too. In fact, I was in a Pontiac dealership in Michigan back in 75 or 6, and they had a cat blow, and apparently it had filled up with so much fuel, and... which I guess was a problem with the carburetor originally. So, yeah, it's been an interesting run for those of us that have been in the business for a long time. Well, anyway.
Well, the big problem is the corrosion effect. Now.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to be right back. We're going to take a break, and we're going to talk more about fuel additives.
Your auto love and investment demands the best, and for 45 years, Passport Transport has been meeting those demands. From manufacturers to the one-car collectors and all other facets of the auto industry and antique auto hobby. The first and the finest with unequaled service and peace of mind. Passport Transport, your auto transportation company. Contact PassportTransport.com with your need today. Passport Transport.
My name is Kyle Hayes, a motorsports student at Alfred State College. Every year, Alfred State students compete in the Great Race, which is a cross-country time endurance rally for vintage vehicles. As you can imagine, it's pretty costly. I'm asking for your help. Your donation can make it possible for these students to live their passion and promote the vintage automobile industry. Please visit our site at give.alfredstate.edu and search Great Race to learn more and help us reach our goal. Thank you.
Hi, this is Steve Rinaldo, host of the Classic Car Show on America's Web Radio. Just talking to you about anti-car insurance, I think that if you're looking for the best coverage for your classic car, consider J.C. Taylor Insurance. They've been my insurer for years in this hobby and have the top rating of all of the insurance companies in the hobby. When you get ready for insurance, call J.C. Taylor or visit jctaylor.com on the Internet.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And welcome back to the Classic Car Show, only on America's Web Radio. We've got Mr. Jim Weber here at the round table. Steve's out in a tour, I guess.
And, yes.
We've also got our fill-in host, Mr. James Dunson, and his boss, I guess you could call him, El Presidente of Bell Performance, Glenn Williams. And Glenn, we're glad to have you and appreciate you joining us on, you probably sleep in on Saturdays.
Oh, boy.
I wish. I have three young kids.
Hey.
But it's good to be here.
Yeah.
Good to be here, Jim and Dave.
Well,
if I can pick up kind of where we left off,
please.
On the ethanol.
Please.
Ethanol causes a number of different problems.
James, I got a question for you. How do they get that corn cob in the gas tank?
Well, you'd have to know how they distill liquor in order to know that. because it's the same way that they make corn liquor. And I don't know what that is because I don't drink.
You're a smart man.
Yeah. But the ethanol is highly corrosive, and it'll dissolve a whole bunch of things like carburetors. It'll dissolve the aluminum. It'll damage plastics and rubber components. And with that, you need something to protect the fuel systems on these this equipment. But small engines, they have a bigger problem, and I'll explain that later.
So, James, you know, we have actually three additives in our line primarily that will, you know, treat the effects of ethanol and help prevent damage from that. There's the Mixigo, there's the Marine MXO, and then there's Ethanol Defense. And we get a lot of questions saying which one is best for someone to use, and I'm wondering if you could just kind of explain how each of those would be applied.
Well, I that's another question that I get all the time. The Mixigo, as Glenn said earlier, it's a multifunction product. It has detergents, it has stabilizer, it has injector cleaner, different things in it. But see, what ethanol does, ethanol will actually pull humidity right out of the air into the fuel. And when it pulls enough of that water into the fuel, a number of different things happen, such as phase separation, and then the gas starts to deteriorate. But the application, Mixigo, if you have a modern car, They're a sealed system. The gas cap, when you tighten that gas cap, there's nothing that's going to enter or leave that gas tank. So when you fill up a car, you're actually filling it up. You're venting all of the air out of it, and plus it's sealed. In that case, the Mixigo is the perfect product for that. The second product that you mentioned, the Marine MXO, it's basically the same base product, but it has more water controllers, because you're in a marine high-water environment. And, you know, there is an element of people out there that if they own boats, they want something that says marine on it. And I've had a number of them that I couldn't talk them out of that. And the ethanol defense, that has like seven times more ability to deal with water, because water is the biggest problem. When you get the water, then you end up with the corrosion, then you end up with phase separation. So these products, if you use the right product and the right piece of equipment, they do work.
I was just curious. You mentioned something in the old tests here, the car tests that you had to get annually and all this, and the gas cap and not. Okay, my car doesn't have a gas cap. Does yours?
Yeah.
Okay, mine doesn't. It's the flip lid on the gas tank thing.
Wow.
Does that affect it in any way, James?
I missed what the question would be.
Okay, I've got a 2018 Explorer, and it has no gas cap. It's the door that opens to fill it up.
Okay.
Does that make it
a flapper on it?
Yeah, it actually does have a flapper on it that does seal when it closes. on the new vehicle. See in the vehicle, they have a emission control device where it actually takes the vapors off the top of the fuel tank, and when you start the engine in the morning, it runs those vapors into the intake manifold and burns them. But nothing can enter, so you can't get additional humidity into that tank. So Mexico is a good product for that. It's a little bit cheaper, and you don't have the problem with the absorption of water.
Okay. Let's go back and let's talk about the old cars for a minute, because I'll just give you an example. Steve's cars run from 1909 to probably the late 60s, and he's got drivability issues with a couple of them. And is your product something that's going to help him if he runs ethanol gasoline in these cars? Is it going to straighten out some of this drivability?
Well, when you say drivability, first of all, as a mechanic, the first thing I'm going to ask is, what are you talking about?
Okay.
Are we talking about misses on acceleration? Are we talking about revital? Are we talking about fuel system damage caused by the ethanol? In most cases, on the older cars, the biggest problem is what the ethanol does to the fuel system components.
Yeah. Well, I'll go and say there's a couple of things that happen. Number one is hard starting, and number two is you have what I would call an intermittent miss in the car. Do you follow me on that, James, where you're driving along?
And we're talking about the older car.
Yeah, we're talking carbureted older cars.
So when you say an intermittent miss, there's a number of things that cause a miss. And again, I get into my diagnostic mode. When you have a miss like you, when you get in a miss like that, that can be a spark plug. It can be a spark plug wire. It can be a vacuum leak. If you have a vacuum leak on an intake manifold, or if you have a hose, a vacuum hose that sprung a leak, those are all items that will cause a miss. So you would have to go through some proper diagnostics. And what I normally do is I put it on a machine and I check out the ignition system, make sure there's no problems there. And vacuum leaks, when you have vacuum leaks, they tend have a tendency to go away when the RPM rises. So to a number of questions, I can pretty well sort that out.
Okay.
But
all right. So basically, it's not a gasoline thing. It needs further diagnostics.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That answers my question.
And I can honestly tell you, and again, I get these questions. I mean, I had a guy call me yesterday from California, and he had a carbureted car. And see, to most of the younger technicians now, they don't even know what carburetors are.
Exactly.
And everything is about fuel injection. So having an understanding of how to adjust things, in his case, it was a simple thing like a choke, you know. And you don't have that anymore.
No.
But
go ahead.
But you know, one of the other questions that I get all the time, and maybe Glenn can answer this, is how long does fuel last? How long can you store fuel?
Well, yeah, that is a prickly question. It used to be, especially with your diesel fuels, diesel fuel was stored and gasoline as well for longer lengths of time. It was, you know, you could put these fuels in an underground storage tank, leave them for a year, a couple of years, and you know, start using them, and they would be somewhat fine. But because of all the changes in regulations, the addition of ethanol, and just some of the other issues that have happened right now, fuels have become a lot less stable, and you're seeing that across the board, not only in this country but overseas. So the recommended usage is within 6 months now. People can't guarantee fuels for longer than 6 months, and that's actually kind of being generous. If you have microbe problems, which a lot of fuels do today because of the environments and stuff, that those microbes can actually deteriorate your fuel at a much faster rate. So you need to, if you're going to store fuel for any length of time, you need to make sure that you're treating it with some kind of chemical treatment that will preserve that fuel, that will stabilize it. And so we offer that, but I know there's other companies out there that might offer something that's viable for that as well. So.
Well, the question that I get from a lot of classic car people is, you know, I don't drive my car that much, and there's usually gasoline in the gas tank. You know, what can I add to that to preserve the fuel? Because, as I said on the Glidden tour, the number one problem was fuel problems, because they hadn't driven the vehicle much during the year, and they take it out on a tour like that and run it, and then they have problems. But you mentioned stabilize. I don't think a lot of people know what stabilizer, what does it do?
So basically a stabilizer, when fuel starts to deteriorate and starts to fall out of solution and starts to, you know, it starts to get compromised. And so, and that happens from the moment it leaves the refinery, but it's at a very slow pace at first, and as deterioration happens, it starts to kind of go a little bit quicker and quicker. So, and of course, when it comes into contact with certain things like light and oxygen and heat and other metals and things like this, that will create a faster deterioration. But a stabilizer will go in, and the easiest way to say is it acts like a fuel preservative. It kind of stops that fuel deterioration because it's got some antioxidants in it and properties that will keep the fuel fresh for longer. So that's what you want to look for, is something that has a preservative, you know, with antioxidants or something of that nature to preserve the fuel. So, James, I'm sure you actually have a deeper definition of that, too.
Well, you know, the same thing. Same thing is true with the seasonal equipment. I get that question a lot of times. People put their weed whackers and lawnmowers away from the wintertime, and then in the spring they have problems.
Give us what your brand name is as to what our listeners should consider when you have a situation like that, whether it is a weed whacker or a garden tool. But how about the guy that puts his car away for the winter, and there's a 40 or 50 degree temperature swing, and he brings it out in the spring and he's got issues with it? What additives would you recommend?
Well, I think the best opportunity to preserve the fuel, of course, you want to look to treat it before you have the problems. That's always when you want to look to treat it. That's the best
right.
solution. So, you know, the two additives that we would recommend is either the ethanol defense. If you're in a hot and humid environment, you can add the ethanol defense to your vehicle or even to lawn equipment, what have you, and it will preserve them, but it also it will deal with the water that can build up and issues like that. Now, we also would recommend Mix-I-Go if you're not so much in a humid environment. You might have a little bit of humidity, but the Mix-I-Go is great. And we have a small version of the Mix-I-Go called Mix-I-Go Small Engine that is a much more a better treat rate for when you're filling up a, you know, a half-gallon up to maybe 5-gallon little tank of gasoline. So you can treat that without having to, you know, meter out. Our products are very concentrated. So, you know, it's 1 ounce to 10 gallons on most of the products. So, but that Mix-I-Go small engine, it's a little bit different treat ratio, so it's easier to mix it properly. So,
okay.
With that, you know, the question.
James, we're going to have to take a hard break here, and we'll be back with James and Glenn right after this.
Hi, I'm Steve Rinaldo, host of the Classic Car Show on America's Web Radio, talking to you about anti-car insurance. In this hobby that I've been part of for years, not all insurance companies and insurance coverage is the same. I would suggest that you call J.C. Taylor or visit jctaylor.com to find out some information about some of the best anti-car insurance you can get, such as agreed value insurance for your classic car. Again, when you get ready to insure your classic, antique, or even your street rod, call J.C. Taylor Insurance or visit jctaylor.com.
45 years of experience is behind the most trusted name in auto transportation. Passport Transport, the first and finest today. That's why Passport Transport is the preferred auto transport for major auto manufacturers, concours, museums, tours, and collectors, and should be your choice from across the state to across the country. When you have the need, go to PassportTransport.com and enjoy the peace of mind referenced experience will give you. Passport Transport.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Ronaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on AmericasWebRadio.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And that's exactly what you're tuned in to, the Classic Car Show, only on America's Web Radio. And we have the only Jim Weber doing a Classic Car Show. And we have the only James Dunce that's telling us what's right and wrong. And Mr. Glenn Williams, who is president of Bell Performance. And, you know, James, over the period of time that we've known each other, I love listening to what you have to say, and now Glenn, what he has to say about your products, and that, and Jim brought up the fact too. We need to know about your website and how to order online and so forth and so on. So I'm going to turn it back over to you, and I stole Jim's question, but
that's fine.
Yeah. Well, I'll divert that question over to Glenn. He can explain that.
I'm sorry. Say that question again. I was just looking at
was that Glenn? Glenn, was that a good nap or just was it too short?
It was pretty good. Dreaming of mermaids.
Oh, and what kind of additive?
Anyway. Yeah. His question was, how do we get a hold of the products and where can we buy them and so forth?
Sure. Sure. Well, I tell you what, the easiest way to get in touch with us, if you go to our website, bellperformance.com, you can find both our array of products and you can find descriptions of them and some help. And it also gives you ways of contacting us directly. So you can get our phone number from there and our mailing address and emails and that kind of thing. But I also want to tell you, if you're interested in ongoing education, and let's say you have small engines or you have classic cars, you have backup generators, we have a number of blogs that we have been doing over the years, and we are constantly updating that with new information, best practices, things that really benefit the consumers at no charge. I mean, we wanted to put this out there because we love to educate people. We love to make sure that people are, up to speed on what can happen with their fuel, how to best protect their equipment, that kind of thing. So you can find all of that at our website, bellperformance.com.
Great. Now, let's go back to my question. I've got cars that have been sitting for probably it'll be a year, and there's ethanol in them. Is there any salvation for me outside of draining the fuel systems and starting from scratch?
Church. I believe church is your only answer.
Go to church?
Church, yes.
first of all, I advise anyone storing a vehicle or any piece of equipment. There's two ways to do that. You either store it all the way full. If you store it all the way full, you limit the amount of airspace on top where humidity can be absorbed, or you do it all the way empty. Well, all the way empty is not practical in most cases. But without knowing, this is something where you'd almost have to take a sample of the fuel to know where you stand, because if a lot of water was absorbed from the ethanol that was in there, your fuel may have gone through phase separation. And phase separation is where the ethanol, so you got to remember, the ethanol is part of the octane. And if you remove the ethanol by going through phase separation, water and ethanol combined, they go to the bottom of the tank. E10 ethanol will hold about 2 teaspoons of water in suspension per gallon. Now, if you would have used the ethanol defense will delay that because it'll actually suspend some of that water in the fuel. And if you suspend it, it'll pass it through the fuel system, won't hurt anything, and it'll be burned in the combustion chamber. But it's an almost impossibility to tell you exactly the condition of the fuel. I would try by adding the ethanol defense before you start the vehicle. I would add that to the fuel tank.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. And I guess, as David says, I should go to church. So,
well, that does help.
I know. You know, it's just it's I coulda, shoulda, woulda type deal. So, all right, let's go back. Besides preservatives, I've got to believe that there's a bunch of commercial businesses that need your products badly, like the tree people or, you know, the people that handle storms and things like that. And that, to me, is something that your products, those people could use.
Well, it's interesting that you should ask that, because one of my primary functions at Bell is I work with the city, county, and government fleets. And a lot of these counties, one particular I work with, they have 290 backup generators. And every one of these generators has got fuel in it. Some of them are gas, most of them are diesel. And I've got other ones that have well over 200. And we have a lot of cities and counties that do use our products, and they are very successful in preventing issues with their fuel.
Okay. Yeah, well, I see bucket trucks parked. There's about a dozen bucket trucks parked in a lot over by me. And those bucket trucks have been sitting there for a couple months.
But we don't want you to think Jim lives by a dump. Or lives in a dump.
No, it's a junkyard, or salvage yard.
Salvage yard. But no, recycling bin.
I sit there and I think about that, and of course, you know, the hurricanes and storms and stuff we get, and some of those trucks might be 2 years old and have 5,000 miles on them because they've only been used in emergencies like that, and I look at those, and most of them are obviously diesels, and I'm thinking, boy, what happens to those when they sit that long?
A lot.
Yeah.
You know, let me give you a little explanation on that, and that's something that I'm very, very much involved with. Diesels, they have a different problem because diesel fuel, the sulfur was taken out of diesel fuel, and sulfur had two purposes. It was actually a lubricant for the injectors and the injector pump. And the other thing is it suppressed microbial growth. And believe it or not, there are microbes that like to eat fuel. And in diesel fuel, that's a big deal. And usually what happens is, see, diesels are normal water generators. They pump fuel to the injection pump, and 60% of it goes back to the tank hot. And when you have a 7-degree change in temperature, you have condensation. So you end up with water in there. And if this water is not handled or removed, you end up with microbial growth. And what that is, they live in the water, they eat the diesel fuel, and when they excrete waste, it plugs up your filters and shuts your engines down and causes you all kinds of problems.
Yeah. I can believe that. And what would you recommend for these fleets then, let's say, to preserve their engines?
Well, as Glenn was talking about stabilizer, mm-hmm. Stabilizer, same thing for diesel fuel. Stabilizers change fuel chemically so that it doesn't break down as quickly. And the other thing that's real important with diesel fuel, because of this microbe issue, is to treat the vehicles with a biocide occasionally. Biocides will kill that microbe. A lot of people call it algae. It's not algae. Algae grows in swimming pools. And these are microbes, and you have to use a biocide in order to kill them. I've actually had people call me and tell me they treated their diesel with algicide. I said, that's not for your truck. That's for your swimming pool.
Oh, man.
And so I get all of those questions. But to treat it with a stabilizer, to answer your question, treat it with a stabilizer before you park it. Make sure you drive it to get that all through the system. The same thing. You can add the biocide at the same time. And we do sell a biocide. It's called Bellicide. And it's very effective at killing those microbes. But I would recommend anyone, whether they're driving a big truck or a small truck, that several times a year I would treat it with a biocide to kill anything that's in there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
James, would you say that your large, well, your counties and your state agencies, and I'd also be interested in the general public, are we becoming more aware of the fuel problems or less aware and like Jim, just go to church?
You know, I'm going to give you an honest answer here. Most people I talk to don't have a clue. They have no idea. And most of the information, in dealing with technician mechanics, and I've trained mechanics and teachers, very few of them know anything about fuel. They know about the engines, but they don't understand the fuel. And in order to diagnose vehicles today, you have to understand the fuel. But most of them, I honestly tell you, don't have a clue.
Wow.
Okay, let me. This brings up another question, and just like you were talking about, a lot of mechanics today have no clue about carburetors because they've grown up on fuel injection, which I'm just the opposite. Anyway, we won't go into that. But if they plug their computer in, is it going to pop up, you've got a fuel problem?
No. What you may get is the result of a fuel problem, which could be a miss or something like that, but you're not going to get a code. There are no codes in there telling you you have a fuel problem.
Well, I think we just made ourselves $1 million. Will you go ahead and design that instrument that we can plug into the computer?
No, usually what I do is, you know, when I get these questions, I compare what the question is that they're giving me versus what I know about fuel and what I know about the computer systems and so forth. But, you know, you mentioned carburetors. I got to tell you, anyone who wants to go back to carburetors doesn't understand what fuel injection can do for you, because it's one of the reasons that cars last as long as they do.
And they perform as well, and they also give good gas.
Absolutely.
Mileage. Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. But unfortunately, as David and I grew up on carburetors, and we still go back and decide, you know, I got to have another car with a small block Chevy with a carburetor, or I've got to have an Austin Healey with a carburetor or two or three. And we still succumb to that. Of course, we still want to dance with the high school prom queen, too. So is there a fuel sample ability or kit that our listeners can use, like telling me, you know, my fuel systems, I can go into my tanks and draw some fuel out. Is there some place I can go and do something with a fuel sample?
I mean, if you're asking about testing,
yes.
This is something else that I do with the company too. On gasoline, the percentage of alcohol in gasoline makes a big difference in how the vehicle's running, and also how much water would be absorbed into the system. And it's important that, you know, if you're buying E10 gasoline, that's what you're getting. You're getting 10% gasoline. But on the diesel side, we at Bell, we actually have the state-of-the-art testing for microbes. We can actually tell you how many microbes you have in a milliliter of fuel. And it's like three different areas. You have a green area, which is 0 to 10,000 microbes. That's where you want to be. And then you have a yellow area, which is 10,000 to 100,000. Somewhere in there is when you want to treat. So it's predictive testing so that you treat before you have a problem. And when you get to the red color, you're there. You're infected. Now you need to do something.
Okay, I want to add one thing to Jim's question. For the Google mechanics, do you ever run into the Google mechanics?
Oh, yeah.
we talk about the Google doctors all the time and the Google mechanics. And I was on Jim's question about having a gasoline kit. It also comes with one match.
Oh, David.
you know, I can tell you that I read that stuff on the Internet all the time, and I can tell you a good part of it is inaccurate. But I'm one of these guys. I've had every bit of training you can have as a technician. And to go to Google, why reinvent the wheel? If somebody's had a particular problem for your make and model, check it out. See if it's there. And the other neat thing about, like, YouTube is if you're going to replace something or do something, there's a video on there for almost everything.
Well, I know one thing there ain't a video on about replacing. But anyway, with that being said, we've got to go to our final break. We'll be back with James and Glenn and Jim and some other guy. We won't mention names at this point. We'll be back right after this.
Your auto love and investment demands the best, and for 45 years, Passport Transport has been meeting those demands. From manufacturers to the one-car collectors and all other facets of the auto industry and antique auto hobby. The first and the finest with unequaled service and peace of mind. Passport Transport, your auto transportation company. Contact PassportTransport.com with your need today. Passport Transport.
Hi, this is Steve Rinaldo, host of the Classic Car Show on America's Web Radio. Just talking to you about antique car insurance. I think that if you're looking for the best coverage for your classic car, consider J.C. Taylor Insurance. They've been my insurer for years in this hobby and have the top rating of all of the insurance companies in the hobby. When you get ready for insurance, call J.C. Taylor or visit jctaylor.com on the Internet.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And welcome back to America's Web Radio and the Classic Car Show. And Jim Weber and James Dunst and Mr. Glenn Williams. Glenn, we certainly appreciate you taking your time to be on the Classic Car Show today. And we think we totally, I know this will probably thrill you beyond words, but we certainly endorse your products and appreciate James being on the show. And now we know he gave me your home number too, Glenn.
All right. He's lying.
Me?
I'll have to change that.
James, talking about home numbers and stuff, if one of our listeners wants to get a hold of you and ask you a technical question, do they go to the website and there's a number there?
Well, you can go to the website. You can ask the question through the website, or you can call me at Bell Performance. The number there is 407-831-5021. Again, 407-831-5021. And if I'm not there, I will call you back. I'm this crazy guy that always calls everybody back.
I thought you said that was Glenn's home number.
No.
It's my second home.
Oh. With three little ones, he gets a pass.
Go
ahead, Glenn.
James, I wanted to ask you, we get a lot of inquiries from customers and people that are just curious. They're trying to maximize their fuel economy, and one of the things that they're trying to do is, like, they'll treat with high-octane fuel or something like that. And so I just want you to kind of comment on what is octane and how does that affect fuel mileage?
Oh, this is the most frequent question that I get, and there's so many different factors involved in this. And first of all, most people don't understand what octane is. When you compress an air fuel mixture in a cylinder in a gas engine, it actually gets hot. And without octane, at some point that fuel and air would ignite. And if it does it before the piston gets to the top, that's what's called pre-ignition. And on those older cars that you're driving, that rattling that you're hearing, that's pre-ignition. And that can be very destructive. But a lot of people think that they're treating their vehicle by adding premium fuel, or they think they're supercharging their fuel by adding premium fuel, and it doesn't do that at all. Premium fuel has about a 1% additional heat value, which you couldn't even measure that when it comes to mileage. But there's a whole bunch of factors that enter into mileage. And I had the opportunity when I worked for AAA to be involved with the EPA test lab up in Ann Arbor. And that's where they do the mileage test, where you see on the car EPA rating X number of miles. And then you wonder, why can't I not get that mileage? And what you have to understand is how they do that test. That test is done on a dynamometer. They use fuel without ethanol. See, ethanol, the more ethanol you have, the lower your mileage because it has less energy. And the biggest factor is when it's on that dynamometer, there's no wind load on it. You're not having any resistance. But there's a whole bunch of things that affect mileage. City driving is one. So the speed that you're driving, the wrong fuel. If you have a premium fuel car, if on your gas cap it says premium fuel, what that means is you have a higher compression engine. The higher the compression, the higher the heat. And so you have to have more octane to prevent that. And octane is actually a combustion inhibitor. But having the windows down creates a drag on the car. The AC running, most AC compressors take 10 horsepower to run the compressor. Low tire pressure, and that's something that I learned at AAA. We did car tests during National Car Care Month, where we ran lines of people through. 80% of the cars that came through that line had low tire pressure on one or more tires. And that's the biggest reason for low mileage. Dirty air filters, outside air temperature. And you say, well, what's that got to do with it? Cooler air has more oxygen in it. So if you ever notice that on a nice, cool evening, your car seems to run a little bit better, and that's probably why. And plus the extra weight in the car. So you have all these factors that enter into it. And then I have the ones that say, well, my computer on the dash was telling me that I'm getting 10 miles to the gallon. And last week it said I was getting 15 miles to the gallon. What you have to understand about those computers is they take an average over time, and it's how you did your last bit of driving. And eventually, if you says you're getting 10 now, if you do a lot of road driving and so forth, that will come up. But you can't really measure mileage that way.
Thank you. Thank you that you have covered all the bases on that, because a lot of people still don't understand that with the computer. And the other thing you brought up is the tire pressure. And to me, the greatest invention has been TPMS. Because it tells the people when they have a low tire. So
yes.
Yeah, but you definitely get an attaboy today, James, for that.
Well, you know, now they use, in the tires, they're using nitrogen.
Yes.
And I get people ask me that question all the time. The reason for that is nitrogen doesn't penetrate the tire like oxygen does. Air in a tire, if you leave the tire sit long enough, the oxygen and the air will actually go right through the rubber eventually, and that's why they reduce. You get a reduction in pressure. Well, the nitrogen is not so susceptible to that.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of dealers are doing that, too, and I agree with you 100%. But even a two-month drop can trigger a TPMS. So that's why I'm so happy with the TPMS, is because it gets people to realize it. Of course, then some people still drive with that light on forever. Anyway... Guys,
well, speaking of that light, the first cool day, everyone wants to know why their low tire pressure light's coming on.
Right.
And that's because the air in a tire is shrinking because of the cool air.
Yeah, and they say,
so you got to change that summer air to winter air.
Yeah, they say, how do I fix it? How do I make the light go on? You put air in the tire. Yeah.
Which tire?
Well, the beautiful thing today, and it's on yours,
it's on my car,
is you can push a button and it gives you all four tire pressures.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean...
Well, what's interesting is I get the question, how did you know that? They actually have the... You know, with these mini circuits, they actually have valve caps that are little transmitters.
Yes.
And those valve caps will actually transmit to a receiver. That's how that works.
And the answer to that is because the tires in the car are smarter than you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But don't lose those valve caps because they're not cheap.
No. Especially the nitrogen ones.
Yes.
What else would you like to cover with us today?
I've got a question.
All right.
Glenn, this is to you. What's on the horizon? And in both your business... And what do you see the car industry doing to your business or coming out with that's going to require something new?
That's a great question. I tell you, if I had a crystal ball that was accurate at all, that would be great. I will tell you, one of the things that we do as a company, and this is one of the ways that differentiates us from a lot of the other additive companies out there, we're constantly on the forefront trying to see where the industry is going, trying to see where regulations are going with the fuel changes so that we can stay very current. We can educate, we can produce, you know, modified additives or new additives to address the growing needs. And so I would say one of the things that we have right now is we have a lot of people that are saying, hey, you know, electric cars are coming and it's the way to go. And, you know, that's true. We've got some opportunities with electric cars and hybrid vehicles, but the technology has not been proven on a mass scale. And so it's going to take a while to get up to that point. You also have autonomous driving cars that, you know, and trucks that are looking like, you know, they're going to come into the market at some point. But, you know, there's still some... some challenges there. So we've got a glimpse of the future of where we're going, and certainly I think we'll get there eventually, but it never comes as quickly or as cheaply as everybody says it will. So, you know, don't think 10 years from now we're all going to be chauffeured around in self-driving cars. There's a lot of hurdles that these vehicle manufacturers have to get over before they do that. So right now I would say the major issues that we're dealing with is, as we still deal with all these fossil fuels, the diesel, the gasoline, the ethanol, all of this type of stuff that we're dealing with right now, it seems like conditions are getting worse because, again, with the regulations in place and the growing number of users out there, you have a lot less supply, and so there's greater demand on some of these producers and the supply chain and everything else. And so they're trying to get things out as quickly as possible. They're trying to maximize through hydrocracking at the refineries to get as much out as possible. And that creates problems chemically, you know, and over time. And so it's not that it's terrible, but what it does is, you know, you have this small amount of stuff where more fuels are more susceptible now, like we said, to pulling in water from the environment. And that's because of biofuels. That's because of ethanol. That's because of a lot of different factors that are being added. You know, in every state, I believe it is, 5% biofuel can be added, biodiesel can be added to diesel, and they don't even have to publish it. But, of course, that will attract water, a lot more water, and hold a lot more water than just straight diesel fuel will. So that's kind of where I see things are happening right now. We're constantly trying to stay ahead of any changes and, you know, anytime there's going to be some major regulatory issues, we really get the word out through our website. So if anybody kind of wants to know that, they don't want to have to, you know, check the regulations all the time, just subscribe to our blog, especially the ones that deal with those type of things, and we will be informing everybody as new diesel standards come out, new gasoline standards, those kind of things. We make sure that we educate everybody.
Glenn, I figured that your answer was going to be that we're coming out with a battery additive. Make the batteries last longer.
I have a question, and it's for James.
Sure.
All right. There's a lot of hybrids now, and I think the hybrid is the way to go if we're going to go anywhere in the future. Is the gasoline engine in the hybrid the same complexity as the current gasoline engines? I know they run probably 86, 87 octane fuel, but is there anything you should do differently with a gasoline engine and a hybrid?
No, it's actually the same thing. And the biggest thing about a hybrid is you're running part-time on batteries and then part-time on the engine. But the engine itself, the everything that we said today is also true of those engines.
Okay, that's a good point, because I have friends with Priuses with 200,000 miles on them, and it's a religious thing with them. They won't do anything without that Prius, which is fine. So, but I appreciate the fact that that engine's the same, and they should know that. Okay, gentlemen, anything else that you can think of?
Well, actually, we're going to have to say goodbye.
All right. It's time. Okay, it's bellperformance.com is the website, and I want to thank James and Glenn today for joining us.
Thank you.
Good to be here. Thank you very much.
Bye.
And we'll see you next week on the Classic Car Show. Right after this.
To America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Your auto love and investment demands the best, and for 45 45-